Welcome to the reading of today's sports section from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Thomas Eichler for the Virginia Voice. Well, hello everyone, and happy Friday to you. It is Friday, April 26, 2024, and as you all know, Friday is usually our launching pad for the weekend in sports, our gateway to the weekend's events. But this Friday takes on a little bit more significance because it is the day after the first round of the NFL draft, and several talented young men have new addresses this morning, including a fellow from LSU who's going to be just up the road. Commanders get their man in LSU's Daniels. Heisman-winning quarterback becomes centerpiece of team's rebuild. This is by the Associated Press, Dateline, Ashburn, Virginia. Jaden Daniels was not sure the Washington Commanders would call his name after months of questions about which quarterback they wanted. He's glad they did. Washington selected Daniels with the second pick in the NFL draft on Thursday night, choosing the Heisman Trophy winner out of LSU over North Carolina's Drake May, Washington's Michael Penix Jr., and Michigan national champion J.J. McCarthy. Unlike Chicago, leading off with Caleb Williams, as expected, the Commanders kept everyone, including the AP's College Player of the Year, in suspense until the last moment. "They did a pretty good job of not showing their hand too much," Daniels said. "But I was pretty confident, based off the conversations that we had, that I was able to come in here and fit into the Commanders team. I'm here now. I can't wait to get to work." Daniels had for quite some time been the favorite to go to the Commanders, though buzz over the last week that put that in doubt after reports surfaced that he and his agents were not happy with the team hosting four QB prospects at once. Daniels, May, McCarthy, and Penix all visited the practice facility and area together, including a group trip to Topgolf. "Everybody had a great time, and it was very beneficial to see everybody in a more relaxed environment," General Manager Adam Peters said last week. "They all got a lot of time individually with their coaches and with us, where they were staggered coming in, too, so that it wasn't like they were sitting in a room together. They all had their own individual time with everybody, so it worked out really well." Well enough to smooth over any issues and make Daniels the centerpiece of the Commanders' rebuilding process and roster overhaul under Peters and an ownership group led by Josh Harris that has been in charge since August. Short of Williams, a Washington area native, who would have been a no-brainer if the Bears passed on him for some reason, Daniels became the pick after leading the nation in total offense last season with 4,946 yards, 412.2 on average over 12 games. The 6'4", 210-pound QB ranked fifth with 3,812 yards passing and with 40 touchdowns, trailed just Oregon's Bo Nix, who played in two extra games. He also ran for 10 more. Daniels, who is 23, blossomed into a star over two seasons at LSU after transferring in 2022 following 3 years at Arizona State. He became an increasingly decisive pocket passer as his trust in receivers Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. grew, and he became more adept at buying time by scrambling rather than giving up on plays and taking off running. Nabers went three picks later to the NFC East rival New York Giants at number 5. It's unclear if Daniels will play right away, get the chance to compete for the starting job, or sit and learn behind veteran Marcus Mariota. Whether it's Daniels, Mariota, or journeyman Jeff Driskel, Washington will have an eighth different Week 1 starting QB in as many seasons after trading Sam Howell to Seattle last month. "I'm just coming in to compete," Daniels said. "I'm going to come in and really just try to play my role, whatever that is. I just want to be the best teammate to help the team win, and we can bring some victories back to Washington. Drafted second by Washington 12 years ago after the organization took Heisman Trophy winner Robert Griffin III out of Baylor in the same spot, the San Bernardino, California native becomes the face of the Commanders under coach Dan Quinn and offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury. Daniels cited Kingsbury's work with Kyler Murray while coaching the Arizona Cardinals as one reason he's excited to play for him. The offensive staff, their track record speaks for itself, Daniels said. Cliff was over there with Kyler and what he did as a head coach, and for quite some time he had Kyler in the MVP conversation. After addressing their most important need with their first selection, the Commanders have eight more in this draft, including five on Friday, numbers 36 and 40 in the second round, numbers 67, 78, and 100 in the third. Peters did not rule out packaging some of those picks to trade back into the first round, a move that could fill a major void at left tackle or elsewhere. So there you have it. Jaden Daniels is the new face of the Washington Commanders. And I'll let you in a little secret that they did not trade back into the first round last night to try and pick up a tackle. But let's run the first round for everyone. And as was previously noted, Caleb Williams was taken by the Chicago Bears as the number one pick. He was the consensus number one among all the evaluators. And then at number two, we had Jaden Daniels taken by the Washington Commanders. At number three, Drake May was chosen by the New England Patriots. May, of course, quarterback out of North Carolina. With the fourth pick, the Arizona Cardinals picked up Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State, wide receiver, who many felt was the best athlete, the best pro in the draft, not pro, but best prospect in the draft, followed only by Joe Alt, an offensive tackle from Notre Dame, who went to the Chargers with the number five pick. Many had picked Alt to go number seven to the Titans. That didn't happen. New big whistle, Jim Harbaugh, decided he wanted better protection for Justin Herbert, and has taken a cornerstone who will be an all-pro very soon. At number six, the New York Football Giants, the G-men took the aforementioned Malik Nabers, wide receiver, giving Daniel Jones another target. At number seven, the Titans, unable to obtain Joe Alt, took the second-best tackle on the board, J.C. Latham from Alabama. At number eight, the Atlanta Falcons stunned me and everybody else who was watching the draft by taking Michael Penix Jr. from Washington at quarterback. Reports this morning out of the Kirk Cousins camp are that Cousins is quote-unquote confused by the Michael Penix Jr. Selection, as well as all of us are confused as well. At number nine, Rome Odunze, a wide receiver from Washington, the aforementioned Washington. Fine young man. At number 10, the Vikings traded up to get their man. They, of course, famously traded Kirk Cousins to Atlanta in the offseason. They selected national champ J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan. So that was a good move for them to get McCarthy, their man of the future, they hope. Elsewhere, the Jets took an offensive tackle, Olu Fashanu out of Penn State. Extra protection for Aaron Rodgers, of course. With the 12th pick, the Denver Broncos selected Bo Nix, the quarterback from Oregon. So, with the first 12 picks, six quarterbacks were taken in the first 12 picks. Amazing. At number 13, Georges Brockbowers, a tight end, went to the Raiders, which is a little bit of a surprise, given the fact that last year they took the best tight end of the draft in Michael Mayer out of Notre Dame. So, Hard to know what's going on there in Oakland, but, you know, two tight end formations are not unheard of, that's for sure. So, anyway, at number 14, Talies Fuaga from Oregon State, another offensive tackle. He was taken by the Saints. The Colts selected Liatu Latu, who is an edge rusher out of UCLA, with the number 16 pick. The Seahawks selected Texas defensive tackle Byron Murphy II. At 17, the Vikings picking again took an edge rusher, Dallas Turner from Alabama. At 18, the Cincinnati Bengals selected offensive tackle Amarius Mims out of Georgia. At number 19, Jared Verse, the edge rusher from Florida State, was taken by the L.A. Rams. At number 20, Troy Fautunu out of Washington was taken by the Steelers. He's an offensive guard. Chop Robinson, an edge rusher from Penn State, was selected by the Miami Dolphins at number 21. At number 22, Quinion Mitchell, a cornerback out of Toledo, was taken by the Eagles. The Jaguars selected Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. He's a wide receiver. Gives Trevor Lawrence another target there. Elsewhere, the Lions, who hosted the draft, they selected cornerback Terrion Arnold out of Alabama. That was the number 24 pick. The Packers, picking at 25, took Jordan Morgan, an offensive tackle out of Arizona. At 26, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers selected center Graham Barton out of Duke. At 27, the Cardinals selected edge rusher Darius Robinson out of Missouri. With the 28th pick, the Kansas City Chiefs, the champs, they took Xavier Worthy from Texas. He's a wide receiver. Gives Patrick Mahomes yet another weapon. At 29, the Cowboys selected Oklahoma offensive tackle Tyler Guyton. At 30, the Ravens selected cornerback Nate Wiggins out of Clemson. The scuttlebutt on that one is that Dabo Sweeney texted the Ravens to select Nate Wiggins. Hard to believe that they did that based on Dabo Sweeney texting them. At 31, the 49ers took Ricky Pearsall, a wide receiver out of Florida. And with the final pick in the first round, the Carolina Panthers took Xavier Leggett, a wide receiver out of South Carolina. So congratulations to all those young men as they embark on the next chapter in their careers as their pro careers unfold. For you draft junkies out there, rounds 2 and 3 begin at 7 o'clock tonight on ABC, ESPN2, and the NFL channel. And for you super draft junkies, rounds 4 through 7 will be televised beginning at noon on Saturday, likewise on ABC, ESPN, and the NFL Network. So those of you that pay attention to what's going on in legal circles will know that Virginia passed an NIL law earlier this week, maybe last week, I'm not sure, maybe last week. But in any event, David Teal has some thoughts on that on the front page of the RTD today. State's new NIL law is applauded. This is by David Teal for the RTD. As an attorney specializing in college sports, Mitt Winter monitors the daily political intrigue surrounding name, image, and likeness compensation like few others. But Virginia's new NIL law especially fascinates him. Two reasons. First, Winter is a 2001 graduate of William & Mary and a former Tribe basketball player. Second, he considers Virginia's measure, signed last week by Governor Glenn Youngkin, to be the nation's most permissive and progressive. With athletes often factoring NIL dollars into their college decisions, such legislated autonomy is an advantage for in-state schools, regardless of size or ambition. Some of the benefits may be short-lived, as college athletics, at least at the highest levels, edges toward revenue sharing and collective bargaining with football and basketball players. But inertia wasn't a viable option either. Winter works for the Kansas City firm of Kenny Hertz Perry and helped Missouri legislators draft that state's NIL law. His clients included unspecified colleges, athletes, and related businesses, and at other firms, he represented the Big 12, Conference USA, and even the pinata that is the NCAA. Winter believes the primary assets of Virginia's bill, which becomes law on July 1st, are that it streamlines fundraising for NIL and allows athletes to be compensated for marketing their teams. The NCAA doesn't permit those activities, but Virginia's law says no governing association can penalize in-state schools or their athletes for following Virginia's guidelines. For example, if an athletic department of the state wants to use athletes and or their images, think billboards, in a season ticket campaign, they can compensate the athletes. The law, quote, basically allows schools to pay athletes, whether they do it directly or through third-party marketing agency that creates content for the university or that its athletic teams, close quote, Winter said. It allows the athletes to be paid for appearing in their marketing content, which makes a lot of sense to me because big-time college athletics at places like Tech and UVA, that's really what the football and basketball teams are. They're really marketing vehicles and donor relations vehicles for the university. Third parties, often dubbed quote-unquote collectives, have become the standard method for financing NIL activities and adhering to NCAA policy that forbids schools from directly paying athletes. But come July 1st, Virginia's law will permit such compensation. If universities and their governing boards decide not to bring NIL completely in-house, more on why they wouldn't in just a moment, the new law affords far more collaboration with collectives and allows athletic departments to raise funds for the collectives. Donors generally like giving money to the school more than they like giving money to collectives, Winter said. Collectives are new. They don't necessarily trust them as much. They may not know the people running them, but they have generally that long-standing trust with the school. And when you're giving money to a school for athletics, you're getting a tax deduction, which is the issue for collectives. Indeed, only some collectives have secured nonprofit status from the IRS, and those that haven't, quote-unquote, probably won't get it, Winter said. The changing dynamic between schools and collectives was evident this week when Virginia Athletics Foundation, the athletic department's fundraising arm, launched the Sabre Society, an avenue for high-end donors to contribute directly to various areas, including the Cav Futures Collective for NIL. Reflecting the cutting-edge nature of Virginia's law, Mississippi and Nebraska subsequently liberalized their NIL laws, though without green-lighting schools to athlete transactions. A primary reason Virginia schools won't immediately start direct NIL payments to athletes is Title IX, the federal statute that requires gender equity in athletics. Would market-based NIL compensation pass NIL muster? Or would NIL funding, like athletic scholarships, have to resemble the male-female ratio of the general student body? Title IX, quote, doesn't talk about market-based compensation or salaries for performance, close quote, Winter said. So it's still an open question whether Title IX applies to that stuff, but I think ultimately it's going to be up to the U.S. Department of Education to issue some guidance, or it will have to be decided via litigation. And the last thing anyone in college athletics wants is more litigation. Among the cases on everyone's radar, including Winters, is House versus the NCAA, a class action antitrust suit brought by athletes who competed before the association approved third-party NIL payments. The trial is set to start in January, and damages could cost the NCAA, conferences, and schools more than $3 billion combined. That's with a B, folks. $3 billion combined. Moreover, athletes at Dartmouth, the University of Southern California, and Notre Dame have petitioned the National Labor Relations Board for employment status, a step the NCAA and its members staunchly resist. For football and men's and women's basketball, the resistance may prove futile, especially with Congress unlikely to grant college sports antitrust protection. I think at some point people are going to be getting tired enough and how easy it is to transfer and the way the compensation system is working now, Winter said. They'll say, okay, we can bring some order to this if we collectively bargain these rules. Well, I'm not sure how to respond to any of this. It's not what I do. It's above my pay grade. But suffice to say that paying the athletes is it's not a new function. It's just that now it's above board, and people have been paid under the table for years. It's still a little bit of a Wild West out there, so we'll just have to sit tight and see how this all plays out. But, the legislature here in Virginia, in a moment of clarity, I think has done something good to try and level the playing field a bit. David Teal said it in his article, the last thing we want is more litigation, but wait, there is more. Here's a little blurb from the Staff and Wire Services. Florida's Attorney General sued the ACC in an attempt to receive the media rights contracts with Florida State as a part of the ongoing dispute as FSU seeks to leave the conference. AG Ashley Moody said the ACC has failed to turn over the contracts despite a public records request she made in January. She argues that the contracts are public records because it involves an agreement with a government-run university. The university and conference are suing each other as FSU seeks to leave the ACC and explore a more lucrative landing spot. The Seminoles are challenging an agreement that binds the school to the league for the next 12 years with more than a $500 million in fees for leaving. On Monday, a judge ordered the two sides into mediation. FSU has been signaling discontent for a year about the ACC falling further behind the Big Ten and the SEC in payouts, even while raking in record revenues. Ugh, Lord, it never ends, does it? So here's a story, again, a little blurb from the wire services that actually feels pretty good. The Washington Commanders are retiring Hall of Fame cornerback Darryl Green's number 28 next season, the latest step in the organization's efforts to honor players of the past since new ownership took over last summer. The team announced Thursday that Green will become the fifth player in franchise history to receive the honor after Sonny Jurgensen's number 9, Bobby Mitchell's number 49, Sammy Baugh's number 33, and Sean Taylor's number 21. No one has worn 28 since Green retired in 2002, but it was not officially retired under previous owner Dan Snyder. Green played all 20 of his NFL seasons with Washington, winning the Super Bowl twice and being named first-team All-Pro in 1991. He holds the record for the most consecutive seasons with an interception at 19, and played until he was nearly 43 years old. Green, a first-round pick in 1983 out of Texas A&I, now called Texas A&M Kingsville, was inducted into the Pro Hall of Fame in 2008. Wow, that's good. That's a good story. I like the way that the new leadership is trying to turn things around here and engage their past, embrace their past, something that Dan Snyder, who I think rightfully was accused of being tone deaf, never really got the message on. So congrats to Darryl Green joining some exclusive company in the Commanders Hall of Fame. Okay, changing gears here. The PGA Tour this week is in Louisiana for the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, it's called. They're playing at the TPC Louisiana. And this is a team event. So the four teams that are tied right now include the duos of Rye and Lipsky, McIlroy, yeah, that McIlroy, and Lowry, Brehm and Hubbard, and Coles and Kazire. So second round action will be getting underway shortly in suburban New Orleans. Over in the NHL, playoff action last night, first round action. The Panthers defeated the Lightning in Tampa 5-3 to take a commanding 3-0 lead. And same story in New York, the Carolina Hurricanes, the odds-on favorite for the Cup this year. They defeated the Islanders in New York 3-2 to likewise take a 3-0 lead. The Washington Capitals will try to avoid that fate tonight as the Rangers come into Washington. The Rangers have a 2-0 lead right now in that series. That's a 7 o'clock drop. Elsewhere, the Predators and the Canucks will go at it in Nashville. That series is tied 1-1, as is the Winnipeg-Colorado series. The Jets are in Colorado tonight for a game with the Avalanche. That's a 10 o'clock drop. And at 10:30, the Oilers and the Kings will go at it in L.A. That series is also tied at 1 apiece. First round action in the NBA last night. The Magic went home and defeated the Cavaliers 121-83. That series now stands at 2-1 in favor of the Cavs. The Knicks took their 2-0 lead to Philadelphia and got beat up by the Sixers last night, 125-114. So that series stands at 2-1. And out in La La Land, the Lakers came home trailing the Nuggets 2-0. Well, now it's 3-0. The Nuggets took down the Lakers last night, 112-105. I watched a fair amount of that game last night, and it's clear who is the better team. Denver is a much better team than L.A., and it would not surprise me at all to see the Lakers do another 4-0 El Foldo in round one of the playoffs. In tonight's action, the Bucks will head to Indianapolis. That series is tied at 1-1. Dallas will be hosting L.A., likewise tied at 1-1. And then the late game tonight, Phoenix will be entertaining the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the Wolves have a 2-0 lead in that series. In Major League Baseball action yesterday, the Brewers over the Pirates 7-5. The Guardians defeated the Red Sox 6-4. The Phillies shut out the Reds 5-0. The Twins over the White Sox 6-3. The Royals defeated the Blue Jays 2-1. Cubs over the Astros 3-1. The Mariners defeated the Rangers 4-3. The Rockies and the Padres staged a shootout 10-9 in favor of the Rockies. The Dodgers over the Nats 2-1, and the Athletics ended up splitting their 4-game series with the Yankees, defeating the Bombers 3-1 in the stadium. Today's schedule looks like this. Detroit hosts Kansas City. Oakland visits the Orioles, the Dodgers and the Blue Jays in Toronto, Nats, Marlins in Miami, the Red Sox host the Cubs, the Mets entertain the Cardinals, the Braves host the Guardians, Rays and White Sox in Chicago, Rangers, Reds in Texas, the Yankees hit the road and head to Milwaukee to take on the Brewers, the Angels host the Twins, the Padres entertain the Phillies, the Diamondbacks and the Mariners in Seattle, and the Pirates and the Giants in San Fran. Well, that's all of our time for the reading of today's sports section from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Thomas Eichler for the Virginia Voice. Have a great day, everyone.